Accession number 28357, reel number 3.
You see, with Germany, I was...
Excuse me, please.
Oh, sorry.
Mrs. Rivera, reel 3.
With Germany, I think I must have been a little prejudiced, not politically, but I didn't speak the language. And in France, I could speak, I could meet people and that. And in Germany, and apart from that, some of the time, at the beginning, we were not allowed to fraternize. We could not fraternize. And so we used to have our meals at Ige Farben. But in the morning, I would go, my boss would pick me up in a jeep, and we'd go to a little place nearby in Hoechst, H-O-E-C-H-S-T. And I can remember very well the a long approach on a very, very, very wide, like a courtyard it looked like. And this was Ige Farben. And you walked right along, quite a long way, to the River Main and Frankfurt on Main, you know. And that's where I worked there. And there I was more or less in charge of the German girls and boys, the young ones. And, you know, like one of them came to me once, and she was a proper little tart. I could tell a mile off, you know. And she came up and she spoke a little English. She said, "Oh, Miss Croza," she said, "this man, he keeps some boy that was working in the office, and he was a nice young fellow. He keeps on pestering me and feeling me and touching me and this, that and the other." So I said, "Oh, does he?" I said, "Well, I'll talk to him. You go away, I'll settle it." So I called him. So he said, "Oh, she's driving me mad. She, it was her, you see," which I guessed already. So I called her back and I said, "He's promised he won't touch you again, and you mustn't touch him. Keep away from him." I never had any more trouble. Things like that, stupid. Another time, I remember one of the GIs, I was popular with the GIs because in the rations, that's the one thing I thought the Americans were unfair. The British civilians got more than the GIs in the way of alcohol each month. It was something like, it was extraordinary. It was exaggerated. I think it was 7 bottles a month. Yeah. And so, if they were having a party or a reunion, they always came to me, and I didn't give it to them. I sold it for what I bought it for. There was no profit or anything. And so I was very popular. Any time they had a do, they came and asked me, you know. And what else?
At Farben's, presumably the Americans would have been in charge of it rather than
completely.
The
they took over completely.
Mm. Was it intact? You know, had there been any damage to it?
No. And it was a beautiful big building, and you came out of it and you crossed the road, and they had a place, they called it the Rotunda, and you could have a cup of tea there or whatever. But in Ige Farben, we used to go, that's where I had my breakfast and meals and so forth. And there they had, like, it would look like a very modern cafeteria sort of thing, you know, and you'd go there with your tray and get whatever you want. And I remember once I bought some toast, I paid for it, and little did I know, there was somebody on the balcony checking. We weren't allowed to buy anything, you see. And it was only 2 bits of bread. I've forgotten now why. Somebody was coming to see me, and I wanted to give them something. And so I was just walking out with my 2 pieces of toast. I mean, a big deal, you know. And this fellow comes up to me and says, "Excuse me, what have you got in there?" So I said, "I've got 2 pieces of toast." I said, "I've paid for them." He said, "I know you have. I've seen you." He said, "But you're not allowed to do that." I said, oh, aren't I? I didn't know, you know. I said, but he took them away and I didn't get my money back. I remember, so you lousy so-and-so. God, dear. Oh, and another thing. One of the GIs, as I say, they were all very friendly with me. And it was really like brother and sister. You know, I never got involved with them or anything like that. And one of them was going to Luxembourg. So I said to him, well, I'd like to go to Luxembourg. Is there any room? He said, sure. Come in the jeep. I'd be glad of the company. And I remember the head of the Germans, he was an American who was in charge of the main thing. His name was Mr. Brown. And I remember him telling me that his mother was the first colored judge in America. That's what he told me. I don't know if it was true. And he came up, he said, oh, would you do me a big favor? So I said, what? Sergeant Smith just told me that you're going to Luxembourg. Now, I'd love to have material for a suit. I've got somebody who'll make it for me. I said, of course, what is it you want? I said, what colour? Nigger brown. And when I told Adrian, he said, oh my God. I said, well, it was nothing then. It was dark brown. They exaggerate here. Oh, like that. What is it? The jam with the gollywog. For goodness sake. But anyway, and I kept on saying nigger brown. And I thought, you know, and I saw his eyes, the whites of the eyes. I thought, oh God, what have I said? I said, you mean dark brown? He said, yeah, dark brown, chocolate colour. I thought, oh my God. And so I brought him back the thing. And another one asked me for dates. They were dying to eat some dates. And somebody else wanted something else, I don't know. But Luxembourg, I always remember one thing. We had the most wonderful steak. I hadn't had it for a long time. You know, lovely. It was really nice. But when I think we travelled from Frankfurt to Luxembourg in that rockety old jeep, you know, my backside, if it was now, I couldn't do it. But I was black and blue, you know. But I thoroughly enjoyed it, you see. And I went again another time when he went, he asked me.
Interesting time to be in Germany. And I'm wondering, did you see much of the devastation, you know, the bombing that had occurred?
I saw quite a lot. But it was more the smell. Oh, God. It hit you, the smell. Oh, they said it was death, you know, whatever. But it was horrible. And I remember one night we went to, some of the officers there took us to a place called the Snake Pit. You know, like a nightclub it was. But the devastation there was shocking. Terrible.
That was in Frankfurt, wasn't
it? In Frankfurt, yeah. Frankfurt proper. And funny thing is, we didn't go actually to the town very much. We were more with Herxt, where we went to eat. And funny thing, not long ago, I read that Prince Philip went to Herxt Castle. And at that time, it was an officer's mess. And I often had dinner there. And I remember all the girls were in love with it. They had an orchestra and they had a violinist. And he was so good looking. And they all said, whether it was true or not, he was a count, you know. And so we went there for the count, not for the dinner, you know.
How about your own romantic life? Did you, you're a very good-looking woman. And, as a youngster, I can imagine.
No. Funny thing. No, you see, my mother, a lot of the mothers that I heard of, they were all pushing their daughters to get married. My mother never did. She let us do what we want. She never had to. She never said, what time are you coming home? Or this, that, and the other. And with that, and I loved dancing. But dancing for its sake. I loved dancing. So I used to go 3 or 4 times a week, even during the war, dancing. And I can remember one night going, and I had a boyfriend. But I mean, it was never anything. I never got really involved. I didn't want to. I was having a good time, and I thought, why the hell should I, you know? So anyway, one day, One night I went dancing, and I remember I went to the Astoria in Charing Cross Road, and I can still remember what I was wearing. It was a burgundy satin skirt, a white satin, and my sister Ida was wonderful at embroidery, and it had a Chinese collar, all embroidered, and a bolero, also burgundy, and I stuck a flower in my hair. But this is the funny part, why I'm telling you what I was wearing. On the way home, we'd walk home, you know, nobody had a car or anything like that, and suddenly there was a warning, and the air raid warden said to us, "You've got to get in the shelter, it's going to be bad tonight." And we were at Tottenham Court Road, that's the deepest shelter there is in London, yeah. And so we went into the shelter, and never forget, it's the only night I spent in the tube, you know. And we went down, I remember, we had to lie on the floor, and here was I, all dressed up with a flower on my hair. By the time I got down, I think the flower was here. When I think of it, what I must have looked like. Then I was, me and my boyfriend, we were there, and I was next to a smelly old man with smelly feet. And he had, I always remember he had his leg out and had a great big hole in his sock. I've never forgotten that. Oh, God, it was awful. And I thought, what an end to a lovely evening, you know. Oh, dear, oh, dear.
What the image, you all dressed up.
Yeah. And I came out looking like a garbage, that's all. I was all, oh, dear. You know, I didn't know where to put myself. I didn't want to go too near my boyfriend. This one smelt to hell. And I thought, oh, my God, dear, oh, dear, but all the things that happened. Yes, but I don't know if you find it so. You think my hearing is good. Adrian doesn't think I hear well, but I think it's because of the way they speak. Do you find that? I don't understand. And politeness? Please and thank you. I try to teach the younger one. Please and thank you. They don't know. And swearing. I think it's awful. I really do. Oh, the one thing I didn't tell you, you'll be interested in. During the war, when I was still home, I hadn't gone. My father, where I went dancing was an Italian club in Soho. And my father joined the club to give us, for us, so we could go dancing. And they often had dinners. My mother and father came. It was a nice entertainment. Sometimes they'd have a concert, you know. I remember Mantovani used to go there all the time. And what happened there now? I often drop the thread of what I'm going to say.
Was this lovely Italian club in Soho?
Yeah. Oh, I know what it means. So anyway, my father enlisted in that club, but he was apolitical. He knew he didn't care about Mussolini or anything like that. And lo and behold, a policeman comes to the door one day during the war and said, "I want to speak to your father. I happen to be home." And Dad was home, so I said, "Dad, somebody wants to speak to you." So he started asking him questions. He said, "I'm afraid you'd better come to the police station with me." So I said, "Well, can he pack up something, you know, to take with him?" He said, "Oh, yes." So my mother quickly packed up. She was crying, you know. So I said, "I'll come with you." So I went. And in those days, I was a bit cheeky, I must admit. I've mellowed. But anyway, we went to the police station, and so I kept on saying, "He only did it for us, so we could go dancing." I said, "He couldn't give a hang about Mussolini or anybody like that." Anyway, we talked for a good hour. They let him off. Otherwise, he would have been interned and 700 Italians, half, I would say half of them, not half, no, that's exaggerating, but many boys I danced with and that, they were all taken over. Oh, yes, because they were Italian, and they were they were sent to the Isle of Man and put on the Arandora Star, which was torpedoed on the way to Canada. Mm. And so all these lovely young fellas that we knew, they all, you know, they drowned, yeah. Mm.
Yes, this would have been earlier on in the war, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be. That's in the 40s, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it must have been a very worrying time for people with Italian origins.
Oh, absolutely.
At the time, was it?
And we had a friend. We lived, as I told you, our bedroom, we were four girls. We had two double beds and we slept there. And I remember when I got up, I looked out, I could see the top of Big Ben. We were right opposite St. Thomas's Hospital, you know, there. And what was I going to say?
Yes, we were talking about the internment, weren't we?
Oh, yes. Yeah. You see, I lose the thread all the time.
We all do. Yes, I do too, so don't worry.
And that's right. And we had a friend of ours who lived in Stangate Street. We were down here, Upper Marsh. Stangate Street led right up to St. Thomas's Hospital. And he was called Mr. Ferrero. I remember Ferrero. And they went up to his house, surrounded the place as though he was a criminal, and took him away, and she never saw him again. Yeah, he was on the Arandora Star, he was drowned. And strangely enough, an extraordinary thing, when I did get married, it happened, I married an American, but nothing to do with the war. I went to Italy where my mother was, with my mother and father, and where she was born, you know. And I met this fellow. And, of course, my mother thought, if he'd been a murderer, if he was born in her village, he was wonderful, you know. But anyway, he was very good. But anyway, I met him there. And now, here I go again.
You were talking about the Arandora Star, weren't
you?
Oh,
yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah. Yes. And anyway, I came back and he proposed to me. I remember the first night we went out and I said to him, listen, I'm up to my eyes with Americans showing you their wonderful mansions and promising this, that and the other. I said, stop it. You know? And he kept on and on and on and on. And I was there for 2 weeks, I think. And at the end, he really ground me down. I must admit, my mother and father, they say, oh, you're lucky. Oh. And I, you know, I often think to myself, I should have thought more for myself, really. But, it wasn't. He was very good in that. So anyway, I came back and I got married. And then when I got married, he was in Italy. I came back because he had another week, I think, to stay, or 2 weeks. And in that time, I went to the American embassy. I was engaged and went to the American embassy for medical and injections and all this kind of thing. And anyway, we got married within 2 months of meeting, I suppose. And then he went to New York. He was stationed there, and I followed him on.
Was he a GI, your husband?
He was a GI,
You were a GI bride? You were a GI?
No, because I married in 49.
Oh, I see,
you see, it was nothing to do with it. Mm. And you talking of GI bride. In 19, I promised my mother when I got married, because we were so close, you know. And in a way, I didn't want to get married. I wasn't sure if I wanted to or not, you know. And I said, I promise you, I'll come back in 4 years' time. And that happened to be the coronation, 1953. And I came back, and she was so pleased, you know. And in my honour, she insisted she wanted a new stove. And do you know, that stove, Adrian's got it up here, is still working. 50 years more. And what you buy today, there you are. Well, today they don't manufacture for endurance. They manufacture for this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they've got to wear out and you've got to buy a new
one. That's right.
Yes.
That's
what
right.
Was it like working with Americans in the war? You know, was it a completely different culture for you when you did you
well,
like
well, being
with Americans?
Well, they were more friendly, you know. They were more friendly, I think. I found them very nice. But when I went to New York, I lived there for quite 14 years, I found the women rather aggravating, you know. When you'd hear them say, do you know we couldn't get nylons? And when I heard things like that, I thought, for God's sake, you know. And I remember once going to a party in America, and I sat next to a woman, and she was blowing out, I'm fed up with this, and the almighty dollar, we have to help everybody get fed up with it, always giving this and giving that. So I turned around, I said, have you ever been to Europe? She said, no. I said, well, you don't know what you're talking about, do you? I was really rude to her. I was furious. So I said to her, I've lived in London all my life. I've worked there. I've never had a penny from an American. Everything I worked for was in pounds. So I've got nothing to thank you for. And I think many like me. So she kept quiet, you know. The women aggravated me. Well, they were pampered, so pampered. And we'd had it so rough that I couldn't, you know, maybe we were a little sharp with them, I was anyway. But I didn't have time for them at all.
Well, while you were in Germany, you were saying, you know, when you were with Farben, you had no idea of their connection with the gas for the Holocaust.
No.
Did you ever hear or see anything about Holocaust survivors or concentration camps during your time there?
Nothing. All I can remember is very vague because it's not clear to me. When I was in Paris, one of the printers there, he was quite a big shot, I think, in Paris. His name was Hervé, H-E-R-V-E, Hervé Effis. And he had two sons, and one of them, I remember he said to me, would you do me, the father said to me, would you do me a favour? Going to the Marignan was, we could invite people if we wanted to. He said, would you take my son? He'd be really thrilled to me. So I said, well, of course. I said, well, where's he? And I remember he said to me, I only thought of it years afterwards, he's come from Auschwitz. And I could not understand, you know. I said, oh, I didn't probe. I thought it's none of my business. And he came and he was charming. He wrote, he spoke English. And he really enjoyed himself, you see. And another thing, no, we weren't aware of it at all. So anyway, when we were in Germany, I remember that there was a young boy, Vogel his name was. He was of German, American-German. And he worked in the office. And he used to call me Miss Banjo Eyes, always Banjo Eyes. I had rather big eyes then. And we had a place where we could go and have a cold buffet-like. And it was called Badenauheim, I think. Badenauheim, yeah. And once a week we were allowed to go there and they'd have cold chicken, ham and that. So I asked this boy, I said, come with me next time. Oh, and he did enjoy it. And he wrote to his mother. And in fact, his mother sent me a big parcel with shoes and everything. Yes, because I was looking after her boy, you know, he was much younger than me. Yeah.
It's interesting you saying you were there at the time of the currency conversion. This would have been before the Berlin airlift, wouldn't it?
Before the what?
The Berlin airlift, when Berlin was sealed off. Am I right in thinking that?
I think that's right. Mm. I'm not certain myself, but I think so, yes. Yeah, that was another occasion that they asked me to stay late, you know, again. And then I realised, I didn't understand it all then, but apparently after midnight the money would be changed completely to stop the black market and all that. And it was rather funny. In the morning when we walked, we used to get out of our hotel room, walk down the Champs-Élysées to the Marignan to have our breakfast. And there were these Germans, they had valise, trunks, everything, carrying money. You see, otherwise they would have lost everything. So, and all the time you see like different posters that went up in France, like once the currency, then they were told to do this and they mustn't do that and they mustn't do that. We printed all those posters, you see. In fact, when I answered the phone, I used to say AG printing. That's what I said. And in Germany, it was the same thing, really. All the printing was done.
That currency change, you were in Paris at the time, weren't you?
Mm. It's funny you're going to ask me that because I've never been able to remember what currency I used. I cannot remember because we went to the PX, you know, where you get all your things, cigarettes, booze, everything, soap, anything. And I could never remember what kind of money we were given. I cannot remember.
It's because you were paid in pounds, you say, weren't you?
Yes. But it wouldn't be, it would have been some token money, I don't know. I can't think. I've often thought of that. I thought, well, how did I go round? What did I use? And I mean, I used to go to, in Paris, I used to go to a play, to Montmartre, and then there was a road leading right up to Sacré-Cœur. And on that road, there was a perfume shop. And every 3 months, we were given 10 days leave. And sometimes I've regretted it, in a way, because I always went home. And, I was at my mother and father were dying to see me, and I felt that sort of pulled me there. And but I've often thought I could have gone anywhere. They had all the Americans, St. Moritz, everywhere you could go. And I could have gone for next to nothing, you know. But there you are. But I always went home. And I used to go to this perfume shop, and the girl there, I remember her name, Renée Brion, and she spoke English quite. So she said, do you think you could get me a job in the thing? So I said, well, I'll try, you know. And I did get her a job. I got her a job. In fact, she was so grateful. She invited me home, and I'll never forget it. It was a place called Saint-Leu-la-Forêt. It was outside of Paris. I took a train. And went there, and it was a small village, and I went to the local there, and I danced with all the village boys, sort of thing. Then we went home, and the mother had prepared a wonderful meal. I can remember she'd made a ragout, a stew, and I remember also they'd made apricot brandy, which they made themselves. It was really, and then when I left, I thanked them very much. They gave me a great French loaf to take home, and there was I in the train poking everybody in the eye with my French loaf. Oh, when I think of it.
End of Reel 3, Mrs. Rivera.